Welcome to Radio C on Youth Express, recorded live from Oakland Catholic High School. This is Gabby Moran, and I'm a senior here at Oakland Catholic. Joining me today are fellow seniors Mary Cumston and Caroline Albacetti and junior Katie Connect. Today we will hear an interview by correspondent Marie Gerges and the staff of a Doctors Without Borders exhibit that OC students recently attended. And then we will continue with a roundtable discussion on global citizenship and the role of faith, youth, and ethics in that. And subsequently, we will hear an interview by Aaron Sheedy and Maeve Callahan with OC alumna Caroline Walker, who is currently our campus ministry director, on her postgrad studies. But first, we will hear an interview from Mary and Caroline with Mr. DiFilippo of the Social Studies Department on a recent Peter Singer lecture at the University of Pittsburgh.
So, as Gabby said, Mary Cumston and I recently attended a lecture by Professor Peter Singer, who is one of the foremost intellectuals in his field. And he spoke at the lecture about the ethics of globalization, a topic which is very important for our generation, because our generation is one of the most international generations in history, due in a large part, of course, to the internet. We interviewed one of OC's esteemed social studies teachers, Mr. DiFilippo, who teaches the AP government class and also attended the lecture by Professor Singer, and he had a lot to say about the topics Professor Singer touched upon when Mary and I conducted the interview with him.
To start off, could you give us a brief summary of Professor Singer's topic at this lecture?
I know he covered several overarching themes. He talked about climate change, not specifically income disparity, but he talked about the fact that there are certain parts of the world that are just below any sort of subsistence level. And I think those are two of the key themes that he hit on.
What do you personally think is the most important point he made, and which of the four main topics most interested you?
I think climate change is the one overriding issue that we all have to be conscious of, and we all have to participate in trying to alleviate. What is particularly perplexing is it becomes a political discussion point, when in fact it's impossible to argue with scientific data. I really don't understand why it's being denied, other than that there could possibly be some implications with respect to industry and costs associated with an industry. I think we have to have a concerted effort. I think it's great that we have recycling, and we're also trying to cut down on use of plastics. You know, I know people, I see a lot more people with water bottles and as opposed to having to use plastic. And I think that governments have a role in this, individual governments. And I think there has to be an international effort as well. So I think all of it coordinates. It really is disheartening to hear that candidates will make statements like, we want to pull out of a particular agreement on climate change, even before knowing all of the specifics or exploring what the issues might be. What's important is that we have a concerted effort to try to deal with the problem.
Peter Singer mentioned the time period from, I think, 1998 to 2008 as a big moment for international change. Sure. And was there any moment for you particularly where you were like, oh, wow, the world is really more global than it was before?
You mean like an aha moment when I just said, oh, yeah, I get it. And it goes back to a book that I read by Thomas Friedman. And one of his first books is called The World is Flat, in which he talked about globalization fitting into various stages. The whole digital revolution, the idea that there was a time when countries would interact with each other as far as trade. Then it became companies were doing that. And again, we're moving through the 90s into the early 2000s. And then he said, in the latter part of that whole development, then individuals had the ability to interact with each other on a trade basis. So his point is that it's become almost personalized, the idea of globalization. You don't have to necessarily be part of a company or part of a government agency, but people are interacting with each other in a trade sense simply by clicking a mouse, simply by being part of the digital world. I think that was my eye-opening moment when it came to the whole idea of globalization.
As the Syrian refugee crisis becomes a bigger and bigger issue today, how do you feel about the UN's mandate of international responsibility?
I think that it's imperative that that be in place. Now, I realize the UN has only limited authority over nations and how nations act. And I think it's important that we make a distinction between immigrants and refugees. So they're two completely different experiences. So I do believe that the United States, at least, should have an active role in receiving people who are essentially fleeing for their lives. A UN mandate certainly is a good step to a positive outcome, at least to help as many people survive as possible. It seems like in the U.S., it's a particularly volatile political issue. I know there's a question of national security that plays into this, but I don't really think that people who are trying to survive the butchering that we're really all fighting against are going to be the ones to worry about.
During his talk, Peter Singer mentioned the current refugee crisis as a very pressing issue in today's world. Our seniors in the AP Human Geography class and some other students in the Global Competence Initiative went to an event sponsored by Doctors Without Borders. One of our students had the opportunity to interview a nurse who works with MSF. Let's listen to what she had to say.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
How did you find out about Doctors Without Borders in particular?
I did some other international work as a volunteer, and I don't know, I've just heard about Doctors Without Borders through articles, through the newspaper, through the web. I knew some about their work, and I thought I wanted to do international work again, and it seemed the best way to do that was to put some of my healthcare background to use. So I go to countries where English is often at least one of the national languages. Generally with colleagues, we can speak English, but with most of the people, the patients of ours we're working with or the displaced people, many don't speak English, so we have to rely on having a translator, interpreter there. That can be somewhat challenging to do that. In a war situation, it's not always easy to get supplies in that you need, so we're constantly working, trying to keep the supplies we need. Yes. People are not always able to reach us because of many things, because of fighting or just because their only mode of transportation is by foot. It's very hot in a lot of places, so that's a problem, or maybe flooding and they can't move. And a lot of people don't have some of the basics, such as particularly people who are fleeing. They may have fled with nothing, you know, just trying to carry their children. So they don't have shelter, they don't have clean water, they don't have soap for hygiene, they don't have food. So one of the challenges is, how do we get that to them? We either can work with another agency sometimes, or we do it ourselves.
Do you have any advice for people who would like to serve as nurses and doctors for doctors?
Sure. If you're interested in doing this, well, obviously get your education. If you are able to learn another language other than English, particularly French, that opens up many more possibilities of doors to go to. Spanish is also very important. We do have a lot of native Spanish speakers, so. But most of the countries we go to, one of the primary languages is English or French, at least among volunteers. To work with underserved people in their communities, whatever, if you get to travel, to have a chance to travel a little bit in some undeveloped countries and have a sense of what that's like.
Yeah.
It's important to learn how to get along with people from different backgrounds and cultures. Like when I go, sometimes one assignment was a very big assignment with an epidemic. I think we had like 30 of us expats. I was the only American in that. So we had people not only from European countries, from different African countries, from Asian countries, learning how to live and respect each other's diversities.
As OC students, we are taught to be conscious of our role in a global world. We are encouraged to attend lectures like Professor Peter Singer's and to go to presentations like the MSF field trip. But what can we actually do to act as global citizens? What makes us internationally aware and active in our world?
Thank you. There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come.
The MSF exhibit was a very eye-opening experience, I feel like, for a lot of people that were there. But for people like myself and people that are taking AP Human Geo, I feel like they knew a lot about the refugee crisis, but not so much like firsthand experiences and like what the doctors are actually going through. These doctors are mostly volunteering their time. They're working in war-torn areas. Everything they do is for the good of these people and to try to benefit them. Seeing that there were so many people that cared about the refugee crisis and are so willing to help was just like really inspiring, considering how a lot of people here in America don't understand the severity of what is happening. We started off the tour like going through like a simulation of what people in these countries are going through, like why they're fleeing. They don't have much time, and so they don't really bring like anything with them. They don't have much money. They're relying on smugglers to get them across the sea, and there's never a guarantee that they'll actually make it. It really just made you think about how privileged you are and how lucky we are to like go to like Oakland Catholic. And it also made you reevaluate what it does mean to be a global citizen.
Given that everyone here had a pretty good idea of the current status of the refugee crisis going into the exhibit, how would you say the design of the overall exhibit gave you a new perspective of the issue?
Because we do live so far away from it, we have an idea of what's happening, but we don't have that human connection or that human understanding of how are these people feeling. How does it feel to be a person in this situation? Like, we understand these people are in danger and they need to leave. They need to run away from the violence and the destruction that's happening in their homes. But we don't really understand fully how dangerous the journey is and how much you have to leave behind. I think that really brought the human kind of perspective to it, and it showed you really how these people must feel.
Going back to what Katie said about talking to the doctors who have been there on the ground, working and actively trying to help them, I think that is a really important point to bring up because, again, we do know the statistics, but we're so distanced from it that it doesn't feel like we can do anything to change it. And talking to the doctors and learning that they're not just doctors, that they have accountants and human resource people, administration and other people there who aren't necessarily just in the medical field, because it's something that we can do, even if we're not interested in the medical field. I think it was also important to learn that a lot of the people who are volunteer with the MSF are local people. This is their home, and it really affects them. It's always inspiring to find out how much people in different places want to change things too and want to make a difference in their own homes.
How would you say your perspective of your own role in this overall crisis affecting every corner of the globe? This isn't solely the Syrian refugee crisis. So how would you say that you have redefined or reconsidered your role in the global community following not just this one particular event, but all of the things you've done over the past 4 years, or for you, Katie, 3 years, focusing on global studies and global citizenship?
The world is getting increasingly and increasingly more interconnected. That's fairly obvious. I mean, you can see it wherever you go. And I think as we move into the future, it doesn't matter what career you have, it's going to be a fairly globally centered career. Anything like doctor, lawyer, engineer, any of those careers are going to be globally centered in the future.
Not just like to the refugee crisis, but a lot of people, especially like in our country, it seems, fear this interconnectivity and they fear refugees. But it's so important for us to like embrace that instead of trying to like shy away from it. Before the civil war started in Syria, Syria was like a wealthy country, and the people in Syria were just like the people in America. Like, they were living their day-to-day lives. They were doctors, they were lawyers, they were accountants, they were businessmen, businesswomen. They were living lives just like we're living here in America. And for all of that to be torn from them in the blink of an eye is just so crazy. And if that same situation had happened here in America, then we would want people to care for us the same way that they're being cared for now. And also that does tie into being like a responsible global citizen. We have to know who needs help and we have to be able to try to help them in whatever way we can.
So Erin Sheedy and Maeve Callahan were able to interview our new campus ministry director, Miss Walker, an OC alumnae who graduated from Vanderbilt in 2015. They talked to her about her post-graduation trip around the world and what she learned.
Sometimes I lay under the moon, I thank God I'm breathing, and I pray, don't take me soon, cause I am here for...
Could you tell us a little bit about what you did last year after you graduated from Vanderbilt?
Well, I spent the whole year traveling around the world. I went to 22 countries to study care for the dying around the world in different cultures.
And so how did you get this opportunity?
I went to Vanderbilt, and they have a special program there called the Keegan Traveling Fellowship that is for a graduating senior every year, and you apply with a topic of interest. So it can be anything. It doesn't have to be morbid. People have done languages, they've done art, they've done economics, but I particularly was interested in studying healthcare and particularly the care for the elderly and the dying around the world. So I applied with a grant proposal, and when the grant proposal was approved, you were interviewed, and through that interview process, they selected two students who got the money for the fellowship, and then you were able to carry out what you had proposed in the grant proposal.
What made you choose end-of-life care?
So I studied medicine, health, and society when I was at Vanderbilt, and I was really interested in bioethics particularly because that is really where my love for science and my interest in medicine met with my faith in such a real and tangible way. In thinking about the universal human experiences, something that every single one of us experiences, death is really that one experience that every single one of us is going to have. And even if we're not anticipating our own death, we've seen it in our own families. And so it's really important for everyone's lives.
So what were your findings during this study of end-of-life care? Did you find a country that was maybe had better end-of-life care than another? And could you tell us about that?
So the range of experiences was really diverse. Sometimes I was in hospitals, sometimes nursing homes, sometimes clinics. Sometimes I would go to funerals. The experiences were really, really diverse. So it was very difficult for this to be a super scientific study where I could compare everything. I think what I learned the most from this is that depending on the country and the cultural values, healthcare is given differently to the elderly and the dying, and sometimes it's not even there at all. So for example, when I was in Benin, which is in West Africa, they don't really have healthcare for the dying. When you are dying, you really just go home and you have a healer that comes with herbs to kind of take care of you, and your family takes care of you rather than a healthcare system. So it's very different, and so it's very difficult to compare them. In terms of what we understand as modern medicine, I think one of the best places that I went to for end-of-life care was in England. They are the first country that had hospice care. It started in the 60s, and because of that, they have a shifting mindset towards end-of-life care in that helping someone to die well, and by dying well, meaning living until you die, you know, being able to feel purposeful, feeling loved, feeling worthy, and like being able to address pain management was really, really good in England because they had a changing mindset there, whereas in other countries, that mindset's not there yet.
How did your faith grow during this, and did your faith help you seeing all this morbidity?
I'm such a weirdo, but one of the reasons I love spending time with the dying, I still continue to spend time at hospices and spend time visiting with the dying, is that I feel that it's a really privileged season of life where people are on their way home to God. They're on their way back to heaven, and that is such a privilege for me to get to be a part of. So from a selfish point of view, that's kind of what draws me to it. But in terms of how my faith has grown, all the way through college it was growing, but this experience particularly really forced me to trust in God. There are so many situations that I was in that I just didn't prepare enough, or I just didn't anticipate them. And the Lord always took care of me, always kept me safe. I never got sick the whole time I was gone. Crazy things happen around the world that you hear about in the news, and I was always protected and kept safe throughout all of those times. And was put in situations where I really shouldn't have been able to get through, and I was able to even without having the languages. People were put in my life to take care of me throughout my whole travel. So it was a really beautiful experience of learning to trust and not rely as much on myself anymore, which is really hard for me because I'm very type A and I really like things to be a certain way. But it was so freeing and such a beautiful experience to be able to say, okay, like my life is not my own. It is a life that I hope I'm offering up for the Lord and that He's going to take care of me no matter what.
That concludes this episode of Radio C on Youth Express, recorded live from Oakland Catholic High School. Special thanks to Mrs. Rinkus, our moderator, and the Youth Express team. We welcome your feedback and input. Please address comments to info@youthexpress.org. You're listening to Youth Express, all youth, all the time. For more of this podcast or others like it on demand, find us on SoundCloud or stay tuned at youthexpress.org. Youth Express, catch the future.